Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there in the listening audience would like to give us a call, our number, 464-8295 in the Monterey Bay area, and 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you're out there across America. Why, we'd love to hear from you. Now, Jeannie Soderman, those of you who don't know Jeannie, is a good friend of ours. She probably knows more about the Global Biodiversity Treaty and the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which came out of the Earth Summit meeting in Rio de Janeiro back in 1992 under the auspices of Maurice Strong, who incidentally is one of the most powerful men in the world today. He is the man who really is the administrative assistant. Well, he's really the man who controls Kofi Annan, the Secretary General of the United Nations. Maurice Strong simply has a front man, and that is Kofi Annan. He is the public relations man carrying out the policies of Maurice Strong, a multi-billionaire, a man whose family is deeply involved in the occult, and he himself has strong occultic leanings. Maurice Strong, certainly one of those shadowy figures who works within international finance through the Club of Rome, through the a Committee on Global Governance, through the writing of the Earth Charter, works very closely with Mikhail Gorbachev and their plan for the establishment of a new world order, a new world economic order, and a new world spirituality. Well, Jeannie has been, of course, been studying Agenda 21, the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which, of course, interlocks with Agenda 21, Maurice Strong's plan for the global neighborhood, our global neighborhood. It was published by the Oxford University Press, laid out the whole plan for world government. Amazingly, after the conservatives started reading it, it's no longer available. You can't get it through bookstores, but it was available, and Jeannie has her copy. I have my copy. Jeannie has put together an amazing document here going into the background of this whole global biodiversity assessment. Jeannie, why don't you tell us what you found as you began reading through this incredible document? How big is this global biodiversity assessment?
Well, first of all, Dr. Stan, it's great to be back. The Global Biodiversity Assessment Report is 1,140 pages.
And
it's,
of course,
a huge book.
And that was put together to explain what the Global Diversity Treaty, wasn't it?
Yes, it's actually a blueprint for the policymakers to implement our local Agenda 21, which is the United Nations, the big plan of Agenda 21, which means the same as sustainable communities. Before we get into that, Dr. Stan, I also wanted to talk a little bit about another book I have that coincides with the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. It's called Our Global Neighborhood. And it's a report put out by the Commission on Global Governance. And I had...
Who headed that Committee on Global Governance?
Actually, there's two men, and one was from Sweden. And let's see, Carlson from Sweden and Ramphal from Guyana. There's two co-chairmen. But there's many members underneath, and one of them, of course, is Maurice Strong, which
Maurice,
you mentioned,
right.
Yes, and Oscar Arias from Costa Rica.
He was the president of Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm. And I looked in the very back because I said, well, I'm going to read this book from page one, and I read the whole paperback. As I understand, we cannot get it now at the Cafe, Capitola Cafe bookstore. And Jimmy Carter name comes up. which I found quite interesting.
Well, of course, Jimmy Carter was simply picked by David Rockefeller and Brzezinski, Zygmunt Brzezinski, to become the President of the United States, and he's always really been sort of an extension of the global elite.
Well, that's absolutely right. Excuse me. As reading through it, this is the only place I have found where it says they're going to take the guns away from the civilians. And on page 131 of our Global Neighborhood, which you can no longer get, it's out of print, I'm going to quote this one sentence. We strongly endorse, and this book was written by the very elite on reforming the United Nations and what agencies they want as the powerful nations, create new agencies in the United Nations. So these are recommendations, but these are from the very, very powerful elite. And I quote, we strongly endorse community initiatives to protect individual life, to encourage the disarming of civilians, and to foster an atmosphere of security in neighborhoods.
And, of course, we see what happens when you disarm the civilians, because then, of course, they have no protection at all against the criminals or the crazies with their guns. And, in fact, this terrible tragedy that occurred in Arkansas within the last week simply shows that had they not had this law, which is a federal law that says you can't have a gun within 1,000 feet of the schools. In other words, no teacher, nobody could be there to defend the children from somebody with a gun. Had one of the teachers had a gun, they might have been able to stop this atrocity. Had somebody had the freedom to carry a weapon to defend themselves and others, you would not have all those dead school children.
And notice they say this law to disarm the civilians is to be by community initiatives. And there that word comes up again, Dr. Stand, initiatives. So they're looking at the local government actually implementing this particular.
You know, I'm talking to a fellow today, talking with a missionary just back from Australia. Now nobody can have a gun. You can have a permit for a gun, but it can't fire more than 2 shots. You know, I have to have a special permit for any sort of a weapon. They've simply picked up all the weapons on Australia, going right along with this whole global program of disarming the population, and the only people with weapons will be the fascist rulers of the world.
And also the United Nations Peace Force,
right,
that will come in into countries that are not obeying the environmental laws.
Now, does it say that in this document?
Well, it talks about the Security Council, and I'm very—I was very upset when I read this particular one on the Security Council and the World Court, and it's on page 319 of our Global Neighborhood, and it actually says, "quote The Security Council is, of course, the supreme organ of the United Nations. It can even second guess the World Court by refusing requests to implement the court's decision." Now, that's pretty powerful, because the Security Council that controls the military is not answerable to the World Court. They are their own Supreme Council. And ever since World War II, at the Yalta Conference, the main head man of the Security Council of the United Nations was to be a Russian.
Now, you're speaking of the Assistant Secretary General instead of political and security affairs who would control the military.
Yes,
right.
Correct.
And, of course, that was written in, actually, into the United Nations Constitution by Alger Hiss, who actually wrote the UN Constitution. And for our listeners out there who would like to verify that fact, a wonderful book entitled In the Cause of Peace by Trigvi Lee. And he actually points out that we agreed to that. In fact, he couldn't understand why we agreed to that. The Russians would always be in charge of the Assistant Secretary General, in charge of political and security affairs, and we would always have the position of providing the finances for the United Nations, and the Russians would always control the military. And he thought that was really great gracious of America.
So this is interesting about the Security Council, because they're the ones that will come into the nations and enforce peace, and it will be headed by a Russian. Now, doesn't that sound ominous, what's coming up?
Well, of course, we've got Gorbachev right here in the United States. They've given him, of course, special quarters at the American Presidio. You and I couldn't get quarters at the Presidio, but Mikhail Gorbachev could. And, of course, on his State of the World Forum, which was the outgrowth of the Gorbachev Foundation. Incidentally, it was formed. The papers were actually taken out between 4 and 6 months before the phony revolution in Russia where Gorbachev was deposed. But you'll find on the State of the World Forum, initially there was George Shultz, Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan. And of course then he was replaced when he dropped out by James Baker, Secretary of State under George Bush. Both men, of course, paying homage to this great world leader, this great humanitarian, the former dictator of Russia, the former head of the Soviet secret police, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Well, I have a great quote from Gorbachev, and this is his quote. "Those who hope that we shall turn away from the socialist path will be greatly disappointed. Every part of our program of perestroika, and the program as a whole for that matter, is fully based on the principle of more socialism and more democracy. We will proceed towards better socialism rather than away from it. We are saying this honestly without trying to fool our own people or the world. Any hopes that we will begin to build a different, non-socialistic society and go over to the other camp are unrealistic and futile. We, the Soviet people, are for socialism. We want more socialism and therefore more democracy."
And of course, it's so interesting when he uses that word democracy over and over again. And Bill Clinton tells us it's a democracy, and Newt Gingrich tells us it's a democracy, and Trent Lott tells us it's a democracy, and the media tells us it's a democracy. And yet, of course, democracies always lead to dictatorships. That's why the founding fathers of America created this country as a Republican form of government. Is that quotation you just gave in what you gave me, the Biodiversity Assessment Report, or is that in another report?
No, that actually comes out of The Rise of Global Governance by Ecologic by Henry Lamb.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Henry's, of course, one of our favorite guests.
Mm-hmm.
Second favorite guest. You're our favorite guest.
Oh, boy, compliments will get you anywhere, Dr. Stan. I have an interesting story. As I was traveling through South America, I talked to a military man at one of the United States Embassy.
Now, this is an American military officer,
yes,
right?
Yes, in the United States Embassy, and he's an American military man. And we were talking about the United Nations and how they're mercenaries and so forth, and they come from all different countries. And I asked him if he still went by the oath of the Constitution of the United States of America. And he says, "Well, I think so." But he says, "You know, Jeannie, we're all mercenaries." This is a man about 35 years old in the United States Embassy in South America. And I thought, that was an interesting comment. He said, "We're all mercenaries."
That's right. In fact, mm-hmm. that just as the Hessians that were here at the time of the American Revolution, they were mercenaries. They were not fighting for loyalty to the English crown because they weren't English. They were simply murderers for hire, and that is what the military of the world is today. We don't longer have an American army. We have a mercenary army, and that really is, we no longer have compulsory service. I'm against compulsory service. Also against a standing army. The founding fathers of America did not want a standing army, because a standing army would be used to push our policies on other countries, and eventually to push the tyrant's policies on the people of America.
I also met a policeman in South America. And we talked about the Clintons, about Hillary Clinton, and he showed me his hand, and he had lost a thumb on his hand. And I said, well, how did you lose that? And this was in one of the Civil Wars, and he said, by a mine. And I said, are you aware that Hillary Clinton funded the terrorists, the Marxists, in the war? He says yes, and he was very, very upset about that. In fact, the students in South America are very well versed on Hillary Clinton. They do not like Hillary Clinton at all.
Well, Hillary Clinton, for our listeners out there, was actually involved in a Marxist organization, and this was, of course, long before she was in the White House. But they were actually funding, I remember, the other Marxist revolutionary organizations in South and Central America. And most Americans don't know that, but they don't understand that today we have a man in the White House who is a dedicated Marxist.
Correct. And so a few of my travels have met very interesting people. I'd like to now go back to the biodiversity assessment report, because I feel that's very important. We might have a different audience. I did go through a lot of the assessment report paragraphs in 7 to 8 hour with Joan Paris.
No, you go ahead and do it, because we have a different audience here, and of course we're on the internet now, and as you can see over there on that computer, your voice is going out all across America on the net. And if you, incidentally, if you're listening out there on the internet, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, we were gone for a week. We're back again. And we'd love to know that you're out there listening. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. You don't even have to go on the telephone if you don't want to, or come on to the radio. But go ahead, and if you want to be a little repetitive, it won't be repetitive for the people listening on the internet.
Very good, Dr. Stan. I have a book called The Global Biodiversity Assessment. It's 1,140 pages. And I said, I'm going to start from page one and go through the whole book, because maybe I'm missing something. And what I found was just horrendous of what they want to do to us people in the world. This Global Biodiversity Assessment came out of the Agenda 21, which was a plan for the 21st century. And what it says, this assessment, is that they will regulate our human activities. And also, they have unsustainable practices and projects that they do not want us to have here in the world. In other words, only the elitists will have all the wonderful homes, the cars, and all the niceties that the middle class has right now. So here again, this Global Biodiversity Assessment came out of the Agenda 21, and it's a scientific, they say, peer-reviewed scientific study of the Earth. And it's funny, when you look at the assessment, it's not really a solid scientific assessment. There's words like, it may be likely, it's possible, it's probable. So it's very up in the air. But I have a list of unsustainable practices.
And among those are agriculture.
Yes.
And cars and private homes and air
yes.
conditioning and electricity. And all of these things that make up modern life in America today. Why don't you just go through those, Gene? Because I think it's so important that people understand these people want to destroy the modern way of life. For everybody, of course, but themselves.
Well, they want to destroy the middle class because we're just getting too powerful and independent. So they want the elitist group and then the peasants, the agrarian society. And that way they will have total control of us. On this biodiversity assessment report, under unsustainable practices and products, I have the page number, and so I have reference where you can look it up in the report. So everything is documented. So what I'm about to say is not up in the air. It's in the United Nations Hard Law book. And this, by the way, is being, or they're trying to implement it in Santa Cruz County. They call it Sustainable Communities or Local Agenda 21.
Now, actually, the Agenda 21 has already been published right here by the local United Nations Association and their associates.
Yes, they presented it in the last fall to the County Board of Supervisors. Okay, here's what they do not want us to have. Modern farm production systems. That means no use of machines in agriculture. Irrigation. Chemical fertilizers. Herbicides. Pesticides, farmlands, rangelands, pastures, fish ponds, plantations, fragmentation. Now, fragmentation comes up. I'm going to stop on that list for a moment, Dr. Stan, because that's a very important word in the biodiversity assessment report. Anything that you disturb the earth and stop it, say, like for agricultural development, forestry, urbanization, that's called fragmentation. Fisheries, now this is a list of unsustainable practices or products that the elitists, the one world government, the United Nations do not want us to have. Grazing of livestock, cows, sheep, goats, horses. Disturbance of the soil surface. That means large hoofed animals, compaction of soil, which reduces infiltration.
In other words, that would be things like cows.
Yes, with
right.
big hoofs.
Right.
That's why Hillary Clinton says, well, we don't like cows. We don't like cattle. Of course, if you had one cow, it gives you milk, it gives you butter, buttermilk. It gives you a lot of things that you could survive on.
Sure.
But they don't want us to survive, it looks like. Industrial activities, plastic production, they do not want us to have. It's called unsustainable. Synthetic products, the use of machines, chlorofluorocarbons, that's CFCs, technology improvements, economic systems that fail to set a proper value on the environment, inappropriate social structures, weaknesses in legal and institutional systems, consumerism, natural gas production, dietary habits. Again, I'm reading from the unsustainable list where the elitists and the United Nations do not want us to have this these products. Natural gas production, I mentioned, dietary habits. Fragmentation of habitat, which means no cemeteries. Sewers, drain systems, pipelines, private property, land.
Wait a minute. Private property is not sustainable.
Correct.
You passed over that so quickly. That is one of the basis of all American freedoms, is the right to private property.
Yes. The right for us to use the property to produce food, to produce wealth, but they don't want us to be wealthy and independent. They want us to be peasants and do manual labor. Wherever the government wants us to do labor, they'll say, well, we have a crop production coming up, so you're to go out in the fields. After private property, I want to get back to private property, though. That's important. Land.
You just went over that so quickly. I just wanted to make sure you didn't. Go ahead.
Land use that serves human needs.
That's not sustainable.
Nope. We can't have any land use or any practices that serves our human needs. Modern attitudes towards nature. That means Judeo, Christian, Islamic religions. Human-made caves of brick and mortar, concrete and steel. Paved and tarred roads, highways, trails, railroads, floor and wall tiles. aquaculture, dams. The dams was mentioned many, many times in the biodiversity assessment report.
We've got to do it with dams, then.
Yes, which we know provides reasonable, cheap electricity.
But they don't want electricity.
That's right.
Because they want to deindustrialize the West.
Reservoirs, straightening of rivers, power line construction, golf courses, scuba diving, modern hunting, harvesting of timber, picking of berries. Now, I found that interesting, picking of berries. They say because when we pick the berries for human consumption, the birds won't have any berries to eat. So the birds are above humans. Logging activities. Fencing of pastures or paddocks or corrals. Ski runs. Fossil fuels used for driving various kinds of machines. Building materials, synthetic drugs, population growth. This is not a complete list of what they want to do away with, but I just went through my notes and just jotted down because it's scattered throughout the whole report, 1,140 pages.
Well, before we go on, at one point you said this was not sustainable. Modern attitude towards nature, Judeo-Christian Islamic religions.
That's right.
Are they talking about doing away with Christianity and Judaism and Muslims?
Yes. Yes. Because they say that we're using the natural resources unsustainable. Because of the one God religions, that God created the earth and we have control over the nature, the natural resources, that is not allowable. That is called unsustainable.
Why, Jeannie, this sounds crazy.
Well, it is. Well, we think it's crazy,
but
Dr. Stan.
The only trouble is that this is being put forward by some of the most powerful men in the world, with the support of Maurice Strong, Prince Charles. In fact, before this original meeting was held in 1992, Prince Charles called together the industrial leaders of the entire world on his yacht, the Britannia. And they, of course, went along in preparation for Maurice Strong's Earth Summit meeting in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. Little known facts, of course, but it's all part because these people of great wealth are pushing this pagan philosophy.
They have a different paradigm, and it's hard for us to understand because we have a totally different paradigm than they do.
Well, let's just call worldview, world vision. I hate these words, paradigm. We
okay.
use the word paradigm because that's their word.
Okay.
And they use it to confuse people. Basically, they have a different view of the world, of God, and of human beings and human life.
That's true. So worldview. Certainly.
You can use the word paradigm, but for our listeners out there, that's really, they use these words simply to confuse us. In fact, they use all these words and they talk very fast and you can't figure out what they're talking about. They're really talking about the destruction of Western civilization.
I'd like to make some comments on the definition of words in the biodiversity assessment report. And you need to understand how they think because it is a different worldview. Traditional societies is any societies before Christian time. Modern societies is societies since Christianity. And conservation, whenever they talk about conservation of natural resources, it means protection or preservation of natural resources. There's two types of people that are in the Global Biodiversity Assessment. One is called ecosystem people, and the other one is biosphere people. The ecosystem people on page 729, it actually defines that, and this is what they want us to be.
Are we to be eco or biosphere people?
Ecosystem people.
We're ecosystem
yeah.
people, okay.
Okay. We are the farmers, the herders, the fishers, and the hunters who depend largely on natural resources gathered or produced from our own immediate surroundings. So anything we eat or make or construct a house or clothing, it's from our immediate surroundings. We can't get it from Europe or Asia or China or South America. It's just locally in our region.
Then we cut down all those trees.
Right.
Right. And lots of luck.
And then comes in the United Nations Peace Force.
Right. We're going to have to take our break here. And when we get back, give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're outlining the nightmare that's planned for America. And back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that we are listener-supported. And if you are out there in the listening audience and you believe that we have a program that is worthwhile, that needs to be heard, that these ideas need to be presented across America. Ladies and gentlemen, we're losing our freedom. These people intend to enslave America, to enslave all mankind, and to alter the structure of civilization. Murray Strong said long ago, in fact, we have this wonderful article that was published in the West magazine. It was entitled, I'm Really Not Kidding, It's Really True, written by a reporter who talked to Murray Strong, who told about how he dreamed of writing this novel wherein they would actually destroy Western civilization. A group of very wealthy people would get together. They would realize that industrialized society was going to destroy the world, and the only way that this was going to be changed, since industrialized society would not change on its own, was simply to collapse industrial society. And ladies and gentlemen, it's coming. I believe, in my own point of view, that that's what the millennial bug is all about, a planned crisis that is going to be used to destroy Western civilization as we know it. And, of course, we'll be told that the government must institute a dictatorship for our own good. It's coming, less than 600 days away. If you want to get more information on it, we have a great deal. We'll be doing more programs on the millennial bug. But, ladies and gentlemen, we need your help to get this message out. We're sort of a lone voice crying in the wilderness. Most people think the millennial bug is happening just by accident, and it's all the computer's fault. It's all the fault of the people who did the programming 40 years ago. Behind everything that's going on today are these dark and sinister spiritual forces, and with your help, we can begin to reach more and more people. But you're going to have to be willing to make some sacrifices, as my wife and I and others do, to help bring these programs. If you would be willing to help us and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a gift of $20 or more a month, well, I will send you the four best tapes in the month, and of course we'll encourage you to copy those tapes and help us to get this message out. And I honestly believe the program we're doing tonight will be one of our tape of the month selections for next month, and with this, getting it to people. And you can get copies of this biodiversity assessment. You can read it. It's all there. Or get copies of Jeannie's summary, which we will make available to you. You have to be involved. If freedom is lost, it won't be because of what you did. It'll be because of what you didn't do. Men and women have become accomplices to those evils they fail to oppose. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we are facing organized evil today. Remember the telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jeannie Soderman, and she's visiting us here from her travels throughout South America. So, Jeannie, go ahead. We were talking about some of these incredible plans. That these are all written. You can get the biodiversity assessment from you get this?
Yeah, Cambridge University
Press. Cambridge University Press, right. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We were talking about the Judeo-Christian Islamic religions that they want to get rid of, because they have to go into a pagan religion in order to have taboos on the natural resources, so you don't go in and cut the sacred forests and so forth. And I like to quote from the Global Biodiversity Assessment on page 839, and it actually says, quote, "Large-scale societies dominated by such groups slowly came to embrace a new worldview and a new value system. This perspective especially is elaborated in the Judeo-Christian tradition, set humans not as part of a wider community of beings, but apart. It came to view nature as totally dedicated to the fulfillment of human wants at the pleasure of people. Societies dominated by Islam, and especially by Christianity, have gone farthest in setting humans apart from nature. Then it goes on to say, most of these people were drawn into the larger market economy and converted to Christianity in the late 1950s. On so converting to a religious belief system that rejects assignment of sacred qualities to elements of nature. So there again, the Judeo-Christian Islamic religions, they're unsustainable, not to be tolerated in the New World government. Now, I didn't finish on the two types of people that were mentioned in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. Ecosystem people we went through, those are the people that will be farming, no machines, probably just doing low put input agriculture. But they talk about the biosphere people, and these are the people they don't want us to be, which we are right now, the biosphere people. Biosphere people are dependent on much larger systems. In other words, we can order materials if you want tile from Italy or Asia or South America or Europe or whatever. We have the ability to buy natural resources throughout the whole world. But they won't allow that. They don't want us to be biosphere people. I'd like to go back into private property because we mentioned, Dr. Stan, that I went through so fast that I want to talk about what they're planning to do with the land. Eventually, the land will not be private property anymore. They call it public property. And they talk about the taking of property by transferable development rights. And they had a huge section on this, and I thought, well, this is rather interesting because on page 897, they have a whole subsection on transferable development rights. And what it is, it's really geared for the multinational corporations to buy what they called the land will be divided into a hectare. A hectare is about 2.47 acres, about 2.5 acres. And on these hectares, they will be actually be traded internationally. And it says, and I quote on page 897, the potential buyers of, they call, TDRs, which are transferable development rights, include local and international organizations, local and international foundations and corporations, develop country governments, chemical and pharmaceutical companies. We'll go into pharmaceutical companies. They're really big in the, going into the third world countries. Scientific societies, universities, and research institutions. Even individuals in the developed countries who are environmentally minded. Now, that's interesting because it looks like all the potential buyers, these are going to be very expensive to buy this land. And so it'll be the foundations that you always talk about, Dr. Stan, the multinational corporations, and the even the individuals that have a lot of money, like, say, the Rockefellers sure. and so forth.
Well, of course, what we're moving towards is a situation where the corporations and the people of great wealth rule everything, a return to a feudalistic system, as has always been planned. In fact, Professor Quigley talks about that on page 324 of his classic book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And if you have a copy of that book, get it out and read page 324. He talks about how the central banks are working to establish a feudalistic system. And, of course, really many of these great corporations are simply extensions of the central banks and the central bankers of the world, the new ruling elite.
There are agreements now between the big pharmaceutical companies and non-governmental organizations and other governments throughout the world. So as I'm reading through this assessment report, it looks where the non-governmental organizations will be the mediator between the governments and the big multinational corporations. One agreement is between Merck Pharmaceutical Company, and they have an agreement with an NGO in Costa Rica.
Now, that's a non-governmental organization for our people out there. NGO, non-governmental organization. So Merck has an agreement with an NGO in Costa Rica, too.
In this particular agreement, Merck has paid Costa Rica government $1.3 million just to start this project. What the non-governmental organization, it's called the National Biological Institute in Costa Rica, will do is they will go into the government-controlled core wilderness areas, and they do what they call prospecting, biodiversity prospecting. Now, we're not prospecting for gold now. We're prospecting for chemical compounds, genes, and so forth, of plants, insects, and microorganisms. So here, the chemical and the pharmaceutical companies have people in Costa Rica going into the core wilderness areas and collecting live samples. They bring the live samples back to the NGO, the non-governmental organization, and they classify them. They have a data entry into the computer. They actually then bring them back to the United States in the Merck labs in the United States. They figure out of 10,000 samples out of the forest, they can make maybe one chemical compound. And when they find a good chemical compound, then they have a patent, and then they pay royalties to the Costa Rican government. So as you can see, Dr. Stan, what's happening, these partnerships, public-private mm-hmm. partnerships, are with the governments, the non-governmental organization, and the big multinational corporations. And so this is what they mean by public-private partnership.
Okay, well, it sounds like they're really planning on everything will be controlled by these people of great wealth.
Yes.
And where are the liberals? Why aren't the liberals out there screaming about this? I mean, you know, the traditional liberal has always been against the great corporations, against this system that has allowed this tremendous concentration of wealth, and yet the liberals are actually encouraging this today.
I don't understand that mentality. I know the environmentalists, and I feel I'm a true environmentalist. I used to be a member of the Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife Fund, Greenpeace, until I found out that the elitists had actually taken over the management of these environmental groups. And yes, the environmentalists they're actually a Trojan horse right now. They're using us, the environmentalists, to get the control of the private property, because these big multinational corporations are going into the core areas of the wilderness. And as an environmentalist, you would think, well, just leave it alone and preserve it and so forth. It sounds so great. But the land is actually for the elitists, the very, very rich, and they will have control of the government control conservation areas.
Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there in the listening audience and you think this thing sounds absurd, you really need to get the biodiversity assessment. And you can get this from the Cambridge University Press. It's available. It can be ordered through your local bookstore. And, of course, we can get you the summary that Jeannie's done. You've done a phenomenal amount of work to get all this material together.
Well, I had a little time on my hands, and it was quiet. I wasn't listening to television or radio, all
well, I
that
hope you
peripheral.
Were listening to Radio Liberty on occasion, at least our afternoon shortwave program.
Yeah, I did get you on shortwave, okay. And that kind of boosted my spirits up Monday through Friday. I had touch with the world.
Okay.
I might mention on this report a chair of the Global Biodiversity Assessment was R.T. Watson. Now, he has an interesting history because he was very, very important in getting on the chair of the panel for saying that the CFCs, the chlorofluorocarbons, were very, very bad. And so he's the one that was behind Al Gore in the Senate to get rid of the Freon and so forth. So he also is the chair of this big global biodiversity assessment. So they're all socialists where they want to control the world and control us as humans. I also have a section on human activities, which I found very, very interesting. Because you know, Dr. Stan, that's the problem, is us humans. All human activity creates a loss of biodiversity.
Now, what do they tend to do about population?
Population. Ah. Well, population is one of the reasons why we have loss of biodiversity.
That's people. There are too many people in the world. So what are they going to do about all those people?
Well, that's a good question because they really didn't address it in the report. But they did talk about the food production because too much water was being used to produce food. In fact, irrigation was very, very bad because we used about, I believe it was 60% of the water, 2.5 times more than industrial society in the industries. So we're using too much water for food. And even going through the whole assessment, they even said that no fertilizers was unsustainable. They couldn't use fertilizers. And they said if we couldn't use fertilizers, we would cut our food production in half. So what would happen? Because we feed a lot of the world throughout creating food production. If you're looking for population, Dr. Stan, I haven't... you don't have that page there. I haven't got to that particular chapter on population.
But don't they actually talk about the fact that we can only maintain about a billion people at our current level of existence? And if we want to have maybe just an agricultural society like they have in Eastern Europe, we can maintain about 3 billion people. But if we want to maintain 4 or 5 billion people in the world, it will have to be in the hunter-gatherer type of society.
Yes, you do have that. It's under human activities. It's on page 2. And I'll quote what they say about how many people they want on the earth. It's on page 773 of the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. It has been estimated that an agricultural world in which most human beings are peasants should be able to support 5 to 7 billion people.
Most people are peasants. That's their terminology.
Yes, yes. Now, I have to question that because we have almost 6 billion people now on the earth. And we have a very advanced industrial society. We're producing enough food for the world. So why are they saying 5 to 7 billion people, we can only have an agricultural world with peasants in it? I don't quite understand their reasoning on that particular statement. Then they talk about a more reasonable estimate for an industrial world society at the present North American material standard of living would be 1 billion people. What's going to happen to the 5 billion?
Well, I can tell you what's going to happen, but I don't want to ruin your evening. We'll have to do that some other evening when we get together. And I'm hoping that we're going to have you back here a number of times, because I think they have a plan. I really do. And I think they plan to dramatically decrease the number of people in the world.
Well, then they talk about a more European standard of living, 2 to 3 billion.
That's a very frugal standard of living, though.
Yes, not too much, but I really believe what they're going through when I read through the assessment is they want a world that's agricultural, agrarian, with only 1 billion people on the earth. And that seems to coincide throughout the whole assessment about no machines. They have an interesting section on women, and I found that interesting because I thought, oh, well, they're going to talk about me, and let's see what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to quote page 770, and to the women out there, this is what they plan for us. And, of course, the United Nations and the WIDA group, the Women's Group on Environment and in Development, they're going to liberate us, give us jobs, get us out of the family. But this is what they have planned for us. Quote, the special role of women in biodiversity-related issues is now widely recognized. The role of women as managers of the environment, beginning with their role in traditional hunter-gatherer societies, credited with collecting 4 times as much food as men. So we'll be going out and collecting food because we're better food gatherers than the men. In settled agricultural systems, and this again, you can see where they talk about agrarian societies, women have often played an especially important role in domesticating animals, inventing selective breeding, domesticating most of the currently important crop plants, inventing tools. Now, I have to stop there because I'm not very good at inventing tools. My engineer degree husband is very good at creating tools. Any type of tool I need, he just creates it. And for women to invent tools, I don't see me doing that. Establishing the use of ash as a fertilizer in crop rotation.
What they're talking about, I'm sure, is something that happened in ancient pagan days, you know, where women, you know, used ash as fertilizer and, ash, you know, learned a soap and how to produce soap with lye ash. But anyway, you know, they're not talking about the real world. They're talking about a sort of a make-believe world.
Going through South America and Central America, the third world countries, they really don't have water to the homes or electricity. And this is what they're talking about in this next section, because it brought to mind, because you can see the women walking along the roads with a big jug of water on their head. And this is where I quote from the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, where they plan to regulate all our activities on Earth, our human activity. Children, especially girls, have traditionally helped their mothers with the daily chores associated with subsistence farming, fuel, wood gathering, and fresh water collection. That I've seen in the third world countries. At the end of the day, when they've done their washing by the stream, what they will do is they will go out and gather sticks of wood and tie them up in a package and put them on their head and bring their fuel wood home so they can cook their food over the fuel wood. Now, that's an interesting observation because they really don't want us going out into the forest to collect wood, especially the Environmental Protection Agency. They want everything left naturally, and it's nutrients for the animals and for the soil and so forth. So what's going to happen to the people that need to collect the fuel wood and need to cook their food? They won't let them do that. But in the third world countries, they're letting them do that right now. It's kind of interesting as you go down the road. The people will just come by and there happens to be some nice earth or whatever. They'll just put the earth in bags or in whatever container and bring it home. And sometimes they make earth and clay bricks and they bake them in the sun for their home. And so there again is, it says in the biodiversity assessment report that they don't want them collecting fuel wood because of taking from the natural resources in the forest. So I'm not really sure. It's illogical. One part of the biodiversity assessment report, they say it's unsustainable. In another part, they do. So to me, it's totally garbage, Dr. Stan.
Well, of course it's totally garbage. But as we commented earlier, these people have a different world view, a different world vision. That, you use the word paradigm. We are moving towards a paradigm shift and the end of civilization as we know it. And we talk to people out there, and they're listening in the audience, and they're saying, oh, this is just crazy talk. Well, somebody put together this report, some of the most wealthy and powerful men in the world who have a different world vision about what the future will hold, and that future is coming within the next several years. Or at least it will begin within the next several years. And we've got Charmaine on the line. Hi, Charmaine. How you doing?
Dr. Stan, real quick, and I put out a post to tell people to go and hear you tonight. And, Jeannie, I sure do miss you. And it's so good to hear your voice. And I want to personally thank you and Dr. Stan for what you guys do for all of us.
Well, please keep pushing this. I'll be back here. And I think maybe it's not a good idea for me to go away. And maybe just probably next time I go, we'll just play some old tapes that we've got around to keep people listening. But this is a fascinating program, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And for the people that don't have a clue about what they would ever do with their lives, they never have to worry again because somebody has figured it all out for us.
Amen to that.
Isn't that nice?
Okay.
Bye-bye
else?
Now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling, Charmaine.
Okay, fine.
We have only a few minutes more. I'd like to talk about Local Agenda 21 here that they have presented to the County Board of Supervisors. We must get a hold of our supervisors, tell them that we really don't want to be peasants. We want freedom to choose what to eat, what to wear, how we will build our homes, and so forth. So this is very important. Remember, Local Agenda 21 is the same as sustainable communities. I have to say that Bruce McPherson says he doesn't know anything about Local Agenda 21. Then, if he doesn't know anything, then he should just go out of his position, because he's here to protect our interest and our rights as citizens. And if he says he doesn't know about it, then he shouldn't be in office.
Well, I thought he was supporting sustainable development.
He says does he say sustainable development? He understands it?
Well, he wants to sustain development. He doesn't understand that the term sustainable development is different than sustaining development.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he actually put a program on recently over in the Monterey area, along with Sam Farr, on sustainable development. That was the purpose of the meeting.
Well, if he doesn't understand Local Agenda 21 is the same as sustainable development, then he's not fit to be in office because he doesn't understand what's happening. We need to get someone educated in protecting our rights.
Well, I don't think most of our legislators really understand what this is all about, Jeannie. This is the amazing thing, and this is why we're so indebted to you for getting this all compiled for us. And we're going to have you on both our afternoon and evening program several times while we have you here to benefit from your tremendous knowledge and tremendous work organizing all of this. And ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to get a copy of what Jeannie has been talking about this evening, can we duplicate this up and send it out?
Sure.
Okay, I make probably a dollar or so, and a self-addressed stamped envelope will send it to you. It's probably about 35 or 40 pages, but you want to have it. You need it. It'll give you the sources, the references in the Biodiversity Treaty. You can read the summary, and then, of course, you need to have access to one of these incredible biodiversity assessments. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time, but pray for America, because what we're talking about this evening is truly a diabolical plan for the destruction of America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. We'll be back again tomorrow night. Good night.